I just want to make the most of it. I recognize that sports, men and women, their careers aren't forever. And while you're there, you got to make the most of it. And every day is an opportunity, so don't let it go by.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Partners in Time. My name is Paul Ripke, and today we have George Russell as a guest. He's from Great Britain, and he's going to have a great season ahead because he's the official pilot of AMG Petronas Formula One, and he's going to race on the side of Lewis Hamilton. So, and he's part of the IWC family. So I had to call him. He did answer the phone. We recorded the whole thing, and I'm looking forward to you guys experiencing the beauty of George Russell, because he's really one of the most inspiring people I know. So let's go up and listen to this podcast episode. What's up, George? How are you?
Very well. A long time no speak to you, Paul.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure hearing that British kind of, is it an accent or is it a type of an English, the real English? I haven't heard that for quite some time. I like the accent a lot. The British accent is very, very good. Where are you right now? Where are you exactly?
I am exactly in Brackley at the Mercedes headquarters, so it's a pleasure for me and an honor for me to be here.
Oh, I love Brackley. We've spent a couple of days there. And what did you do today? Is it a media day? Have you done some simulator testing? What was your plan like today?
Today's been a bit of everything, a little bit of simulators, been some marketing and media. I've just got off a virtual call with the partners alongside Toto, which was good fun. Always nice to see him and catch up with him. And then, as I said, here we are now. It's currently 6:30 in the evening, and I'm talking to you.
So the boss was there. Toto is there in Brackley as well, or was that the virtual call?
No, he was here in Brackley as well. So okay. Getting ready for the season. Obviously, it feels like there's a fire within everybody at the moment, following obviously quite a controversial end to the season, and that motivation and fire within everybody from the top to the bottom is absolutely immense. And you know, it fills me with so much energy and motivation just to see the desire within them. So that's awesome.
You must be like super stoked about that, right? Like, so we spent a couple of days walking around the factory. Now you're the real driver, sort of, you know, like that must be different to have that feeling, right?
Yeah, it is. It's so strange because, I mean, obviously we spent a lot of time together when I was a junior driver back in when I raced in Formula 3 and Formula 2, and I was always in Brackley, always with the Mercedes guys at the races. And then obviously I went to race with Williams for 3 years, but I still spent so much time with all of the engineers, the marketing team, with some people in Brackley. And yeah, in a way, it almost feels like returning home. It feels like I never left in a way. And it feels great. Now I'm here. It's official. These relationships have already been built. So we're just straight into working and trying to make the car as fast as possible. And it feels very so natural as well, which is great.
Totally. So, do you fit in the car? Did they make enough leg room? Because you're so tall, right?
They made it bigger this time. I mean, the last time I drove, it was a squeeze. I had to wear, I'm a size 45 shoe, and I had to wear size 43 last time to fit in the car, and my knees were banging and my shoulders were rubbing against the side. And now I fit like I'm sat on the sofa. So that's great.
But you can't switch cars if anything goes wrong, right? Because the other side is smaller at the end.
That's going to be your... They're the same. It might be too big for Lewis now. I don't know.
Yeah. Talking about watches, because this is the IWC podcast. Are you wearing an IWC right now?
Of course. I wear it on a daily basis other than when I'm exercising. I've got my pilot's Top Gun on at the moment, and it's a watch.
Oh, which color?
It's in black. I don't know the specific color, what the official
is
color
it like,
is like a grape.
Grape is ceratanium.
Yeah, that's the one.
So it's special. It's super. It's the best color, if you ask me.
Oh, I love
ceratanium. It's a special creation. I had a podcast with the guy who invented it. It's an invention by RWC. So it's the only watch brand that can do that, and it's insanely impressive. I love it. So I'm a little bit jealous because I'm not getting that watch.
No, I love it. I think it's great for every day because it's depending on what you wear, and you can wear it casual, but also, you know, when you've got your smart clothes on. So it just looks great. It looks aggressive. Totally. It looks aggressive.
I don't want to talk too much about the upcoming season and how it ended last year or whatever. That's part of the, like, the media is going to pick up on that. But I do want to talk about how you got into motorsport, because, like, I know you for 5 years now. How did you start as a kid? Because there's tons of footage of you as a kid, this great picture of Lewis and you where you, like, asked for his autograph. Where was that, by the way?
Yeah, well, that was back in 2009. So, I mean, my hairstyle at the time was pretty awful. My mother was cutting my hair back then, and it was dreadful. I never wanted her to cut my hair, probably because it was so bad, and I just let it grow out, and it was that was pretty awful. But no, it's such a surreal moment now. You know, looking back on this image, I was 11 years old at the time. Lewis was already a world champion, and, you know, there I was asking for his autograph, and here we are now, you know, racing alongside him for Mercedes. And that's pretty awesome. And at the time, you look at these guys as if they're superheroes. You know, I remember I was at an award ceremony, and I think it was the same year, coincidentally, 2009, when Braun had won the championship, and obviously Ross Braun being the co-founder. And I remember he was at this award ceremony, and just totally coincidentally, we were went to the bathroom at the same time. And as this 11-year-old kid, I couldn't believe Ross Braun went to the toilet. I don't know what I thought, but I thought these superheroes, you know, didn't do those things. I don't know, and I'll always remember that, thinking, you know, wow, Ross Braun went to the toilet. Like, it's crazy. It's only now that I'm in Formula One and I see all of these guys, and I, you know, obviously all insanely talented, but they're just normal human beings at the end of the day. And that's something that I've only learned since I arrived into Formula One.
When do you think you switch from being a fan or somebody who adores all those superheroes? And when did you realize you're now part of it? You're now in the crew.
I don't know. I mean, I don't see it that way, to be honest, because, you know, I don't feel like a superhero, if that makes sense. I believe these people were superheroes and something from another planet, but now I'm there, I recognize we're all the same. And even though I've got a huge amount of respect for all of these people and admire everything they've achieved, you know, they're just people at the end of the day, and we're in the same circus together. So you have this respect for them, but you're not, you're in awe of people as much anymore, because I've recognized even, you know, incredibly famous people I've seen in the paddock before. I also think the same, like, I know, he must go to the toilet as well. I saw Brad Pitt once, you know. I'm sure he's gone to the bathroom at some point, and he does everything in his day as we do. Wake up, brush their teeth, go, well, I hope they do that. I'm sure they do. You know, go to the gym, obviously probably in a different scale or capacity, but, you know, we're all human, living different lives, but, you know, we're just all human at the end of the day, and there's no reason to treat people differently, no matter their background or what they do. And I think that's the approach I have now, and I think that I'd like to think that makes me grounded.
Very much, I do agree. How did you start into motorsport? Like, did you do karting, right?
My older brother is 11 years older than me, and he started go karting at 10 years old. So I grew up on a racetrack. I used to have this little pedal tractor, I used to pedal around the go-kart tracks on when I was 2-3 years old. And it was quite funny. I used to have this water tanker I used to put on the back of my pedal tractor, and I used to collect all the water for the go-kart team to fill up their radiators for the engine every day. They'd drain the water, fill up the water, and there's this 2-3-year-old kid going around collecting all of their water for the day in his water tanker. And I also used to collect these old tires I don't know why, it was just on my little trailer. I used to collect these old tires, and it was a way for my dad just to let me entertain myself, I think. But there was one day he was a bit cross at me because I came back and I didn't realize, but I'd gone into somebody's garage and I'd taken a brand new set of tires that I had no idea were brand new, which are obviously worth, you know, 100 or 200 pounds. And I've just effectively stolen this person's brand new set of tires as a 3-year-old kid and brought them back to my father. And there was no way of finding out whose tires they were. So I think I don't know what we did with them in the end. So that was the early days. And then I had very early days. And then I had a 50cc quad bike from about 4 years old, before I jumped into a go-kart for the very first time at 7. So I don't know. I look back on these experiences of pedaling my tractor and driving a quad bike around a field, and I really do think it helped me become the driver I am today, because when I jumped in the go-kart for the very first time, it felt natural. You know, I was used to movement. I was used to speed. I was used to controlling something with four wheels and a steering wheel, okay, albeit on a pedal tractor and on a little 50cc quad bike. But I think that was ingrained into my body from the age of 2, and it's all I've ever known. So sounds silly, but I do really believe that helped me when I jumped into a go-kart for the first time.
100% it did. And did you, Benji's your brother's name,
Benji's
right?
Correct, yeah.
Benji. And did you ever race each other in cars?
No, he always...
Not even privately now?
No, I mean, we need to set it up. The closest it got is that... So the first time he met Claire Williams, who was obviously the daughter of Sir Frank Williams, who founded Williams.
Yep.
The first time he met Claire, he told her that she signed the wrong Russell and he was the fastest Russell. So I think she joked and said, well, let's get you on the simulator then. And we took her up on the offer and got Benji on the simulator. So he was...
And who was faster?
Well, I mean, obviously, it would have been pretty atrocious if he was faster than I. He wasn't. He was a long way off. But he was definitely respectable. And he was probably faster than some of the drivers they've seen on their simulator before, to put it into perspective. I won't say any names, but no, Benji was a great driver. He, in go-karting, he won multiple British championships and he won the world championship once in his
oh, really?
Category in 2007. Okay. So, you know, he knew what he was doing, but he started a bit too late. I mean, he was 10 years old when he started, but that was too late, which... It's crazy to think about it. And he was just a bit behind the curve. But without him and the experiences he had and my family had gained that experience of racing through my older brother, I probably wouldn't have had as much success as I did in my early days, because my parents had already had 10 years worth of experience in go-karting and knew the ropes, knew what it took to succeed, and maybe made less mistakes. So I've got to be pretty grateful for that.
Totally. Did you make Benji a pass already for the paddock for
not? He's not probably, as yet.
He has a flat rate, right?
Not as yet, but he'll. I'll get him one. A yearly pass. I think it's the least I could do.
But he's probably quite happy for you, right?
Oh, of course.
It seems like you have a good relationship and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's racing's like a drug, and it feeds down into your whole family. You know, my sister and my brother have been so supportive of me throughout my whole career. And I mean, when I was growing up, there's a huge financial contribution and commitment my parents were having to make to afford us to go racing. And, you know, I guess it could have easily have happened that an older sibling felt like that was unfair, that, you know, let's say 10 times more money has been spent on one child compared to the other, but they recognized that's what it took to be successful in motorsport, and they completely backed me, and they've never ever had any doubts or any hard feelings or anything. And that's why I feel like it's so important for me to give back, not just to my parents, but also to my brother and sister, because, you know, they had to sacrifice as well. They didn't miss out on any opportunities, I'm sure, but, you know, maybe they could have had other opportunities if they pushed my parents, because maybe they felt like it was unfair, but they never did. And I have to be so, so happy about that.
Very wise said, and very, very nice. That's why I like you so much. You know, like, we always got along because you're in a social way raised insanely well. Like, you have so much social skills, and you're so, so nice and so, yeah, humble as well, which I really adore.
I appreciate
Keep
it.
That humbleness, please. So now you're in one of the fastest cars, we could all agree, right? Like, so today you did the simulator, it feels probably nice. Which one was your favorite car so far? Starting from the tractor back in there when you were three with the water tank and until today's car. Which one is the number one if you have to choose?
I've obviously had the pleasure of driving a few of the world championship winning Mercedes cars, which without a doubt were the best cars I drove, but they weren't truly my cars as I was the test driver at the time. So I won't bring that into the equation. I mean, cars you won in or carts you won in, they are the ones you love. You know, it doesn't matter how it looks, how it feels. If you win, you love it. And it's the same with a racetrack. If you're fast there, you love the racetrack. It doesn't matter how exciting or boring the track may be. So I'd say probably my most successful year of my career was 2018 when I raced Formula 2, which I've actually got a very nice photograph on the wall of my flat, which you took back in 2018 when I won the championship. So I appreciate that you was there to live the moment and capture those memories for me.
It was really, really nice. That was so good.
That was an amazing experience for me, because in a Formula 2 and a Formula 3 team, the team consists of one engineer per car and two mechanics per car. So the team has a total of probably 14 members, whereas in Formula 1, you have 2,000 people. And because of that, and because I was a Mercedes driver, whenever I was on the podium, there were all of the Mercedes team and engineers, marketing staff came to the podium to support me. And as a young driver aspiring to race for Mercedes, to get to Formula 1, and seeing all of these people that you're only used to normally seeing 10 people supporting you, suddenly there's an additional 20 to 30 all supporting you from the world championship winning team. That was a special moment, or special moments for me. So that was cool.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, I shot World Cups in soccer. I shot a couple of wins in Formula 1. But I just, actually 2 weeks ago, somebody asked me what has been one of the top five. And I said this exactly, because like, that was pure joy and pure, like, how happy you were. And I mean, that's also been one of my first years. And Mr. Paddock, he kept watching it. He was a super fan of and supporter of you, which is still one of the nicest people working for Mercedes MBGP. So, and which, by the way, he still has no driver's license, right? You can work for a Formula One team without having a driver's license.
I didn't know that.
You have one, right?
I have one. You have to have one to drive an F1 car. So.
So and he brought me into it, and we were following the whole season, and the pure joy you had winning that, and the way your team and you together, like the whole success in that, and how the emotions got up there, that was super impressive. Like, and that's been more impressive than a couple of Formula One races wins I captured. So kudos to that. That's really been a great day back in there. And I like the way that you answer that question, that might be your most favorite car so far. But let's hope in this year, in 22, there's a couple of more favorite cars and tracks that are coming around. Because, I mean...
We cross our fingers, but you've got to go out and make it happen. You know, you can't sit here and hope. You have to go out and make it happen, as you well know. So, it's going to be such an exciting season to see how it all pans out. And there's so much anticipation to see these new changes and excitement, and also for me, new experiences, new people around, and you know, going racing alongside Lewis. It's pretty special.
I'm super stoked. I'm looking forward to that. But I have a special feeling about your season. You're gonna if you work hard, you're gonna have a good season. Just watch out for the car in Silverstone. Remember that. When you had a little in between everybody, when you had a little, maybe something went a little wrong within the fans. let's switch to a couple of more other questions. I want to know, because I've never seen you really race, you know? So how's your preparation on a race day? What's your race day routine? So you work with a physio, right?
Yep.
You posted about him. I saw that. What do you do before a race? How do you get in the zone, in the racing zone?
I think for me, I'm not one of these guys who likes to hype it up. I'm not one of those, I need to listen to this, I need to get in the zone, I need to whatever. Because I feel like your body's in like this... excited and almost angry state when you're hyping yourself up, and you're almost anxious, I feel. So for me, I've almost got the opposite approach. I like to be calm. I like to be relaxed. I like to go about it as if it's any other day. You know, I feel like I perform best when I'm calm and I'm relaxed and I don't put any pressure on myself. So, you know, I listen to a bit of music in the morning on the way into the track, nothing crazy. And say hello to everyone, have a coffee, chill out. And to be really honest, that's about it. As boring as it sounds, I think that's what works for me. I appreciate guys who need, you know, the rock and roll music to hype them up and get them ready to smash it into the first corner or whatever. But, you know, that doesn't work for me. And I like to be nice and calm and relaxed. So everyone's different. Maybe people look at me and think that's crazy, and I can't believe you don't get yourself in the zone. Or they might think I'm missing a trick. But you know, I know my body. I know from my past experiences what works for me, and that does. So nice and chilled.
Do you drive to the track? Do you drive yourself?
Well, I went through. I hope my trainer Alesh isn't listening to this, because I did go through a phase where I insisted on driving because he just drove too slow. It was making me, I was actually sweating and getting anxious that he was just driving too slow and I was just losing time. I'm not asking him to speed, don't get me wrong, but at least follow the speed limit and just be there. And, you know, we'd be sat on the motorway just doing 100K when the speed limit's 140 or something. And I'm just, you know, inside of me dying. And I felt bad to keep telling him to hurry up. So yeah, the way I got around was I started driving. But since our relationship grew and the trust grew, I just basically say, look, Alesh, come on, put your foot down and let's just get home. Straight to
But I can tell you out of my own experience, because I was a driver, like I drove cars with Formula One pilots in there. It's a lot of stress for a person driving that car, and you guys are really it's not the easiest to drive you guys to track, and it's super hard to decide you want to go fast, you don't want to go fast, you want to be on time, you don't want to be on time. There's so much stuff, and I lost a lot of sweat on ways to racetrack. So be a little bit think about him. I want to that's gonna be good. So that's super nice that you're super relaxed. Is that the same if you're super stressed? For example, the Formula 2, the F2 race before, like if you know this is my day, like are you still that relaxed?
anybody who says they don't feel a bit nervous or anything, they're lying, because everybody feels it. I think it's how you... I've almost taught myself to channel it into a good sort of good vibes, almost like, oh, I'm feeling nervous, but that's a good thing. You know, tell myself that's a good thing, because that means that you're ready for this. And if you wasn't a bit nervous, then, you know, why are you here almost? But it's so strange. I mean, I've had races where I've been super nervous before, but I put the helmet on and I jump in the car and those nerves just disappear. And you feel like you're in such a calm state and you're in a world of your own almost. You don't see the surroundings. You're just focused on one thing, and that's driving as fast as possible or keeping the car behind you or overtaking the car in front of you. You're so focused on that you don't have time to be nervous, you know, because your mind is occupied. Whereas the most difficult moments for me is just waiting. If you know you've got a big event ahead or a big race, and you're just waiting and you're waiting and you're waiting, yeah, that's just annoying. And I always want to find ways to pass the time. If it's, you know, we go to Singapore or Bahrain and the race is at 8 o'clock in the night. I mean, we live on an offset schedule, but still, you're waking up 10 hours before the event and you have all day to think about it. But you need to find ways to take your mind away when needed and think about it when needed, but don't just sit there letting it play on your mind and letting the pressure build up and the expectations build up. Just be calm about it. Just be chilled about it, and do what you do best. And that's what I tell myself.
Yeah, that's good. And you're probably, like, I don't know if you followed me on Insta, but I gained some weight again. And I'm trying to get rid of it. And then I'm seeing topless George Russell pictures of, like,
Bermudas. For a while. This is
so you're fit. What's the secret of George's fitness? There's no way I can be as fit as you are, but I want to learn a little bit. What's your health advice to me?
I think everybody knows what to do, but knowing it and doing it is, you know, two different things. Everybody knows they need to eat well, but when you go for dinner and you see a burger or a pizza on the menu or a salad, most of the time you take a pizza or a burger, not the salad. So I think it isn't rocket science. You know, eat well, sleep well, train well. And it's, there's no secrets. That it's good routine, I think, for me. Yeah. It's sleep is something I've really prioritized over recent years. I think the better I sleep, the better the more recovered I am when I wake up. Therefore, I feel like I can train harder. The longer I sleep, the less hours there are in the day to eat, which sounds stupid, but, you know, if you sleep for 6 hours a night, you're awake for 18 hours of the day and your mind and your body feels like you need to be eaten. But if you get a good 9 hours of sleep, you know, you're awake for 3 hours less. So there's physically less time in the day to be eaten, but you feel better and you can work harder, you work more efficiently and you're happier. I find when I sleep well, I'm happier as well. And I think that's a big thing that people don't pay enough attention to. Everybody talks about diets, everybody talks about fitness regimes, but nobody really talks about sleep. And that's something where I feel like as a community or in life, we're missing out on, and more thought needs to be put into that.
100%. And how much do you drink? I don't think we've had one beer in our lives before, but you're not a big drinker, right?
No. I'm not. I mean, I drink when it's appropriate.
Abu Dhabi at the party. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe the end of season if it's been a good one. You can't be robotic. You can't be 120% the whole time. But we say with my trainer, if you eat well for 80% of the week, 20% of the time, you're allowed to give yourself a little treat. I don't do 80-20. I'm probably more 95-5. But I feel like a lot of people believe after one salad, that's fine. They can then eat a dessert afterwards, and that one salad has made them suddenly healthy. But if you're 80-20 in the wrong direction of 80% of the time you're eating rubbish and 20% of the time you're good, to be honest, that 20% probably isn't really doing anything. The same way as if you eat well 80% of the time and you treat yourself 20, that 20% won't have a big effect. So enjoy it.
So did you, like, coming out of last season, because this is an important year for you, right? Like 2022 is going to be one of your most important years, probably. Did you change something? Like, do you see yourself more focused, or is there something different?
To be honest, no, because every year is important to me. If I feel like I need to be doing more now to make me faster, then why wasn't I doing that already? And if there was something more I needed to be doing, I would have been doing it already, if that makes sense. So, you know, the objective is the same, and it's simple. It's drive as fast as you can. Obviously, when I was growing up, the objective was clear. It was, you know, be on pole and win the race. And if you didn't, that was almost a failure. My experience at Williams the last few years changed my view, because that just was not possible with the team and the car we had. And suddenly your expectations have to be readjusted. But my goal when I had the helmet on was exactly the same, which is drive as fast as I can and do things right, work with the team in the best possible manner, you know, put the effort in, work on the setup, work on your driving. And if you do all of those things, I believe in myself that the end result will come. But I think if you start putting an actual value on it, then that's incorrect. I think a different way to put it is when I go to the gym with my trainer, he doesn't say to me, do 10 reps. He says, keep one in the pocket. So if that's 12, that's 12. If that's 7, that's 7. If that's 15, that's 15. Because if you put a specific value on it, what happens if you can do more? You know, do you just stop when you reach your value or your goal? If you can achieve more, you take more. But I think if you look at it differently, do things right and push yourself to the limit, then those objectives should be complete.
That's super interesting to listen to you. How do you, because I've had quite a rough last 5 months, I would say. We had trouble with the visa, my podcast just kind of changed and here and there. And you've had probably, what's been the most frustrating moment of your career?
I'd say probably more difficult moments than frustrating. I think I've had a couple of moments when I let myself down and I felt very disappointed. One was when I crashed into Valtteri last year. Obviously, I'm a Williams driver. You know, I know that I'm a Mercedes driver as well, and I wanted that Mercedes seat, and crashing into effectively one of my teammates and the way I went about my business afterwards was not good enough, and that I was really disappointed with. The race I did with Mercedes in 2020 when I stepped in for Lewis when he had COVID felt completely under control, and suddenly we got a puncture and lost the race. You know, that was deeply disappointing and that was frustrating as well. But I feel like all of these moments make you stronger. I feel like if you have it too easy, you don't know how to deal with disappointments, because nobody's going to go through life without failure. Nobody's going to go through life without difficult moments. And I feel like if you don't experience this, you don't know how to handle it. You don't know how to react in the moment. You don't know how to bounce back. And I think psychologically, you learn a lot about yourself. So for me, those disappointments, those failures or shortcomings have been the best moments of my career because that they have made me stronger. And without them, I would probably be a lesser driver today.
Super interesting. I'm learning a lot over here. It's really impressive what you're seeing.
I want to be hearing your wisdom. I'm still, I'm sure you've got a lot more wisdom to share than I do.
No. Not really. No, they're just a little bit about cameras. On a personal note, do you have a photographer following you this season?
I'm sure we do. Yes, we do. Are you trying to sell yourself?
Yeah, just I'm free. I have time. No, I might come around for 1 or 2 days. It's super interesting to listen to you, and I could listen for hours, but I'm kind of want to switch to our reoccurring segment, which is a couple of questions we keep asking the guests, Chris, the co-host, as well as I do. One of them would be 3 words, how you would describe yourself. You can only use 3 words. That's kind of the 22 version or 2022 version of George Russell. What's the 3 words?
Wow. That is, it puts me on the spot here. I'd say tenacious. I'd like to say grounded, probably. And, third is difficult. I mean, tenacious covers a lot of, it's a pretty, widely, it's quite a widely used, can be used for a lot of different meanings. That's why I think that's a good word, tenacious, grounded, and ready.
Yeah, you seem hungry. That's what I like. I really like that. Like, you seem hungry, focused, and humble. That's my 3 words how I would describe you, which is 3 very good things, I would say. Another question, what would you have more time in your life, like, because do you feel like you don't have enough time? Is there something you want to have more time? If you would have more time, what would you spend it with?
I don't know, to be honest, because we, in this Formula One circus, you live literally such a fast lifestyle. You're here, there, traveling around the world, but you're focused on your job, you're in the simulator, doing your marketing activities, in the gym, working hard at the races, getting back, debriefing, whatever it may be. And sometimes it feels sometimes overwhelming, but then when I have a day off, I want to get back to it. You know, I'm living my dream. My dream is being a Formula One driver. My dream is to win a world championship. And, you know, when I have a day off, I'm bored, in all honesty, and I want to get back to doing what I love doing and what I live for, which is racing. So I'm incredibly fortunate to do something I love, and I don't take that for granted, because I think I am so fortunate in that sense. But equally, I just want to make the most of it. I recognize that sports men and women their careers aren't forever. And while you're there, you got to make the most of it. And every day is an opportunity. So don't let it go by.
That's the best ending words I've ever had. George, thanks for being here, a guest at Partner in Time for this episode. I could listen to you for hours.
I appreciate it.
Stop at one point. Thank you so much.
Thanks
super
very much.
Interesting, super inspiring. Keep up. I'm rooting for you this year.
Appreciate it.
I'm gonna be rooting.
Thank you very much. Cheers, Paul.
Okay. See you. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
So that's been it, my dear listeners. What an inspiring person George Russell is. I really like him and the way he talks about it. If you feel the same, maybe I can ask you for a little favor. Maybe you subscribe to this podcast, because there's going to be a couple of episodes coming up that are going to be on the same level as this one. So if you did like this podcast episode, you should subscribe so you don't miss out on the next episodes, which are going to be super interesting, at least if you ask me, because IWC and all of the world of IWC is super interesting, and there's so many stories that I kind of want to try to talk about. So make sure to subscribe over here, and so you're not missing any other episode of IWC's podcast, Partners in Time.